Here's the story of how you can win a trip for two to LA to visit the iconic Brady Bunch house. Not only visit the home, but spend the day there exploring and brunching with members of the Brady Bunch cast. If you remember, Kristen, Michelle, and I had the time of our lives when we got to visit the home back in September. It was truly a magical experience. And now you can have an experience like that too, alongside cast members from the show. Simply visit thebradyexperience.com to enter the Brady Brunch sweepstakes. And from now through January 31st, PCPS listeners can get four entries for the price of one. All you have to do is put PCPS in the add order note section of the shopping cart. And the goodness doesn't stop there. For every 10 purchases you make, you'll have the opportunity to tour the house on your very own. Just remember to put PCPS in the add order note section of your shopping cart. You can feel good knowing that a portion of your purchase goes to No Kid Hungry, a campaign to help end childhood hunger in America. So get those entries in and cross your fingers. Good luck, everybody. Hi, listeners, and welcome to this encore presentation of episode 82, These Happy Days Are Yours and Mine, where we share the impact that happy days had on our culture and on each of us personally. Like, one of us almost had their husband recite Chachi's wedding vows. You'll have to listen to the episode to find out who that is. And as we talked about earlier this season, Happy Days is one of those TV shows celebrating its 50th anniversary. Oh my gosh, yes. Can you believe, you guys, that it has been 50 years since we first gathered around our television sets on a Tuesday night to watch Richie and Fonzie and Joni and Potsy and Ralph Mouth and all the others living their lives in Milwaukee?
It doesn't even seem possible because I'm still a child. How can that be 50 years ago?
And I think, and you might argue with me, but I think it, for us, for our generation, it might have been one of our first introductions to appointment TV.
Oh, like, that's true.
Since when has Tuesday night been so, you look forward to it, it was exciting?
When I think about it in my own timeline, the reason that I may have been showing up like that is because even though I was six, those teenagers were kids. And so I was showing up for a show about kids, whereas everything else I watched with my family was, you know, whether it's Sonny and Cher or All in the Family or Mary Tyler Moore, those are all stories about adults, which I thoroughly enjoyed. But this was for us.
Well, and it was the 50s. It was like, I think we talk about this in the episode too, but our fascination with the 50s in the mid 70s was enormous. And so for me, it was the poodle skirts and just the music. And
our parents wanted to watch it then.
They did, yeah.
This was very nostalgic for them. Yeah. And the I don't want to be left out FOMO Carolyn knew that that's what everybody else was doing. So I better watch it too, because I wouldn't be cool if I wasn't watching it and couldn't partake in some of the conversations. Mm-hmm. You know, again, back then we had these collective experiences that everybody, as we say, was experiencing at the same time. And honestly, I think the world could maybe use a little more appointment
collective
TV.
Yeah, more appointment TV that we all bond over, all of us.
Exactly, exactly. And I recently came across, not that I spend all my time on social media, you guys, but on Threads. And for listeners, if you don't know about Threads, it's like the new Twitter. It's like a happy Twitter. And I came across a post from a TV writer and producer, Jennifer Gross. And it not only struck a chord with me, but thousands of others based on the replies and how many likes she got. And here's what she wrote. If you want to know what will reunite America, it's 22 episode TV seasons, the anticipation of next week's airing, and run through the airport rom-coms. It's the wholesomeness of game shows and commercial jingles. It's shared community and laughing at the same things and finding common ground through all the little connections physical media and spaces gave us.
I feel seen. I feel so seen. I agree 150%.
Yes, you and thousands of others. And, you know, this is coming from someone in the industry. This isn't just, you know, people just, oh, the good old days.
We don't bond with people that we know for six episodes. We don't fall in love with characters that we only know for six episodes.
When you bond with them, though, by season two, are you guys watching Shrinking on Apple TV? So Brian and I love Shrinking, but here's the thing. We liked it season one. We liked it enough to watch season two. Now we love it. Now we've only seen a total of, let's say, 16 episodes, right?
Mm-hmm.
We now feel like we know these characters finally, and we've bonded with them, and we know their quirks and what they're going to say. We were watching the latest episode last night, and I had this exact thought, Carolyn. I thought to myself, I'm so sad. I bet next week's the last episode.
Yes.
I bet there's only 10.
Yes.
And I just have felt like I've just now really gotten into their stories and what's going to happen. And oh no, he's going to be mad when he finds this out. Or
oh, and then it'll be 2 years before they come back.
I almost thought, why bother?
Yeah.
Why bother getting invested in a new streaming show?
Yeah. Well, to those points, Jennifer went on to say that the reason viewers are reaching for comfort shows, like for her, she says Parks and Rec. I think we can talk
about. We're
doing
Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Office.
We watch them over and over.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I think we could even say Little House on the Prairie and all of that is because humans need constants and shared community. What makes TV special is the intimacy of these characters coming into your living room and becoming friends. After work or school, you come home and you see them. You go on a date and you see them. Through good days and bad, they're part of your world for long periods of time and major life events. You can't make that kind of connection in a weekend binge.
Oh my God.
I love that.
I wish I could be more articulate in my response to that. But I feel like we've been saying this for 4 years, that there's a huge loss here for us.
That's exactly what I told her, because I actually replied. I think it was this is her reply to me when I said, we have a podcast about this. This is what we've talked about. And she said, exactly. I rant all the time that the reason we're so divided is because we've lost all of those shared moments and sense of community.
Yes.
There is real power in experiencing things together at the same time. And when we find joy and laugh at the same things, it connects us and reminds us we're not all that different. Binge watching in silos has disconnected us to the point of division, and the convenience just isn't worth that loss. Society cannot function as separate entities. We need each other.
And that's just her response to your comment.
Comment, right.
And it is so 100% true. And it makes me really sad for the people who are growing up with this style of TV that they will never find each other.
Right.
Who knew that I Love Lucy would be the answer, right?
Right.
Well, but I think, too, I would love to have her on the podcast, and we could have a really good chat about this, because I know that there's a lot of you out there, listeners, who feel the same way. I also think, you know, she mentions like Parks and Rec. Kristen, you said you guys are watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine. We'll watch a Friends episode, and then we'll watch six more, and they might be ones that we'll say, I think we just saw this one like 3 months ago, because Friends was such a collective experience. So if it's a show like The Office or Parks and Rec or Friends, or, you know, there's a lot of these sitcoms or even hour-long dramas that we know everybody watched 15, 20 years ago. So even watching them again today is comfort, because there's too many shows out there. We have like every streaming service, and we sometimes are so overwhelmed, we don't know what to watch, or we'll say—
I do it every day.
Sort of going back to what I just said, I'll say, well, do you want to start this show? And we'll go, well, no, because there's only 8 episodes and we don't know if it's going to get picked up again. So why invest, you know, the next 2 nights watching these 8 episodes when let's just watch Friends. Let's just watch. It's that comfort
reliable
show that connected us all.
Yes.
Right. It's reliable, but it also connected us all 25, 30 years ago. So watching it now brings that feeling back. Does that make sense to you guys?
It makes you feel
it
grounded.
It brings that feeling back.
Yeah.
Because also there weren't as many shows. There's too many shows right now.
Yeah, too many to choose from.
So bringing it back to Happy Days, I know I talked about this in our Encore Open a couple of episodes ago, how we asked our listeners all the shows, songs, music, whatever, that brought them comfort.
Yeah.
So many of them were television shows. Way back when, people say, I go to bed every night watching an episode of Family. I go to bed every night watching 8 is Enough, because these were the shows that they could, like you said, Kristen, they could rely on. They're still relying on them this many years later.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And those characters, we were invested in, you know, Susan and Merle the Pearl on 8 is Enough, when they were like, are they going to stay together? They're fighting. Oh no, his, you know, pitching arm, all the things. Like, we needed to know. And Jennifer, our friend, she sums it up so well, I think, in this one sentence. She says, 5 seasons of 22-episode broadcast comedies with holiday, vacation, and bottle episodes would heal our nation. My
God. Yes. I really do believe this because we don't agree more. And she mentioned in her first comments about how we had to wait the anticipation mm-hmm. of the weekly show, and we all waited together, and it aided in our bonding with these characters. There is a loss when you get everything you want whenever you want it, when you mm-hmm. can listen to any song at the drop of a hat. And I think we talked about this earlier too, where you go to Spotify to listen to a song and then you don't want to listen to that song, so then you go to the next song and you don't want to listen to that song, so you skip to the next song.
Oh my God, all the time, right?
You can never just sit and enjoy, because there's always something better out there that you can pivot to. You can't just sit in the moment and enjoy what is handed to you.
And you know what else? And this makes me really sad. There's also an equity issue with some of these things. Not everybody has just access to have all the streaming services. Like they don't have, you know, the money to do that, let alone maybe have the electronics that it takes to access these. So you're almost alienating people a little bit.
But I think in 1975, you could bet that almost all households had a television set.
Yeah, had at least one TV set. Yeah.
And all of those shows were free. There was no paywall for any of these shows. It was free and open to the public. Look at how far we've fallen from that idea.
It's terrible. Mm-hmm. It's terrible because, let's circle back to Happy Days, what this episode is about. Because we all had access to Happy Days, right?
Yes.
I just mentioned a while ago, are you guys watching Shrinking on Apple TV? And my first thought was, oh, do they have Apple TV? So maybe they can't watch Shrinking.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's a really good show. Or people, I hate it when people will say, are you watching this? And I'll say, oh no, I don't have, you know, Max
Right.
Or but they've watched it all already and you're afraid they're going to tell you
like
in Succession that, you know, what happened? Someone died.
Oh, everybody
right in the
knows.
Middle of an interview
everybody
with Sean
knows.
Cassidy.
I thought it was a water cooler moment that all the United States showed up for when died. And Carolyn had not shown up for the moment yet.
No.
And I ruined it for her. I told her.
Well, you had to have HBO Max or whatever. So, right. I mean, we do, but Andy wanted to watch it. So we were going to do that together. I mean, people have all their reasons and you don't have to watch it at the same time because you can get it at different times. Kristen would always say, like, oh, next time you're at a dinner party or a cocktail party, you know, ask where someone like favorite episode of the Brady Bunch, or, you know, we can talk about the Little House on the Prairie episode or Happy Days. Yeah. And what are our kids going to do? What was your favorite episode of whatever,
of
you know?
What? Fill in the blank. Right.
I love what she's saying. I'd love to get her on the podcast. I think we could have a great conversation with her. But I'm just so happy that we have shows like Happy Days now, of course, streaming, that we can watch them all.
But even if we didn't have streaming, we could still have the memories.
Yeah, we have the memories of showing up for that.
Mm-hmm. You do.
And you could talk about that with people of your generation. And and for 50 years, we remember these shows.
Yes.
And I can't tell you the last time I watched a Happy Days actual episode or watched it through, but those episodes are near and dear to me, as are Little House, also 50 years, you know, Land of the Lost, all the things.
I know when you watched it, it would have been when this aired, because we all watched Fonzie and Pinky. Because listeners, if you, after you listen to this episode today, listen to the next one, because, and you'll hear us talk about it in this episode, because we take that beloved, iconic episode of the Big Demolition Derby, and we break that sucker down.
And it's the
not
Malachi
just for
brothers.
Fun. We actually also have a really good discussion of Fonzie's growth.
Oh, we do.
And of his intellectual growth, his emotional growth.
We do.
I'm going to wrap this up by blowing your mind for a minute. Okay. I want to go back to the comment that Michelle made about how we were so obsessed with the 50s in the mid-1970s. So in 1976... you know, the Happy Days would have been taking place in 1956, 20 years prior. So if we were to make the equivalent of the Happy Days today, we would have a show in the year 2004.
Oh.
Okay, Carolyn's like hyperventilating into her shirt.
Carolyn's doing that Target Lady meme where the Target Lady pulls, you know, the Kristen Wiig Target Lady?
Yes.
She pulls her turtleneck up over
her. Because I want to say, 2004 wasn't very different.
What does it even look like? Like, yeah. I think I'm wearing the same clothes that That's I was wearing right. in 2004.
You have the same hairstyle.
I have the same hairstyle.
The same makeup.
Yes. Yeah, I 100% mm-hmm. still have underwear I wore in 2004.
Oh my gosh.
What
yes,
does that
time.
Even look like?
What is time?
I know.
Oh my goodness.
It's well, you know what time is? It's a beautiful thing. Look at us. We're all is. Still here. Mm-hmm. We're chatting. Right. We're laughing.
Well, let's take a trip back in time. How about that? And without further ado, please enjoy this encore presentation of episode 82. These happy days are yours and mine.
Yours and mine. Da, da, da. Are you wondering how the PCPS stays afloat? I'll tell you. The answer is with contributions from listeners like you. We depend on your support to pay for recording services, audio software, transcription fees, website hosting, and the hours and hours of research, writing, editing, and engineering that go into producing each show. If you'd like to help us keep doing this job that we love, you can join our crew of supporters over on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com and put Pop Culture Preservation Society in the search bubble, and they'll tell you what to do. You can choose the level of support that's right for you, from our superstar level at $5 a month all the way up to our bicentennial level. Yes, you guessed it, at $19.76 a month. In exchange, we'll send you even more PCPS content, after the episode conversations, video clips, and even invitations to live virtual events with your hosts. Your support is our accounts payable department, doing all the heavy lifting so we can keep our jobs. We love you guys. Thanks for being here today, and enjoy the show. And we played Happy Days all the time. And the most coveted role, of course, was always Fonzie for boys and girls alike. And I'm going to reveal to you guys that some of those Fonzie games were not exactly appropriate.
Oh,
let's just say that playing Fonzie was our version of playing Doctor.
Hello world, there's a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy.
Welcome to the Pop Culture Preservation Society, the podcast for people born in the big wheel generation who know that running in slow motion means you are bionic.
We believe our Gen X childhood gave us unforgettable songs, stories, characters, and images. And if we don't talk about them, they'll disappear like Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition.
And today, we'll be saving the show that inspired our entire generation to shut down their adversaries with a salty sit on it. That show is Happy Days.
I'm Carolyn.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Michelle. And we are your pop culture preservationists.
Sunday, Monday, happy days. Tuesday, Wednesday, happy days. Thursday, Friday.
Decade, the years between 1974 and 1984, millions of Americans tuned into ABC on Tuesday nights to watch a Milwaukee family's life from the 1950s to 1960s unfold. And I was one of them, front and center. Happy Days for me is one of about three shows that really defined my childhood. Sure, there are countless shows I watched and loved, but only a small handful to the degree that were as meaningful to me as Happy Days in my early childhood. And when I say meaningful, I mean everything from the degree to which I loved it to the importance the entire trajectory of that series had on my little life. Did I start watching it in 1974? I'm sure no. I was five. But from about 1976 to 1984, you guys, I was all in. And when Chachi Arcola entered in season 5, which was in 1977, my life literally changed. Literally. My life literally changed.
This is true. And I want to say the year that your life literally changed when you started watching it was the one year that I did not watch it. Because you guys, the 77-78 season was when the Fitzpatricks was on CBS at the same exact moment. So you were being introduced to Scott and I was falling in love with Jimmy
McNichol.
Oh, the
conflict.
Yes.
Conflict, Carolyn.
It was terrible. I had to watch it on a little black and white TV set in my parents' bedroom because everybody else in my family, it was must-see TV in
the family room. So, but that was the only year that I digressed. Otherwise, I was a staunch fan.
This was not only appointment TV, Tuesday nights at 7 p.m. on Channel 9. It was a shared appointment. I think that was the case for a lot of people. It was mostly for my brother and me. And it can be hard for a brother and sister to find things that they are both equally into. So Happy Days was kind of like our meeting of the minds. It was like two adversaries coming together in the spirit of Fonzie. And it was actually the whole neighborhood. All the neighborhood kids came together in the spirit of Fonzie. And we played Happy Days all the time. And the most coveted role, of course, was always Fonzie for boys and girls alike. And I'm going to reveal to you guys that some of those Fonzie games were not exactly appropriate.
Oh,
let's just say that playing Fonzie was our version of playing doctor.
Well, did the Stein girls play?
No, this is pre-Stein girls.
I think the Stein girls created that game.
And it was like, it was nothing out of the ordinary for, you know, body curious 8-year olds, but it was still probably something that our parents would have shut down if they had found us.
Dr. Fonzie, I have this pain right under my shirt.
But to keep it clean, you guys, this is the best part. To keep it clean, we would always put a piece of notebook paper between the person who was doing the kissing, which was Fonzie, and whoever or whatever Fonzie was kissing. Yes. So there was never any skin on skin contact.
I'm sorry. Let's back it up. Beep, beep, beep. Or whatever Fonzie was kissing.
You know, there's a lot of places on the body you can kiss. And there's a lot for an 8-year-old to explore.
Oh, this is fantastic information.
Yeah, but don't worry. There was a piece of notebook paper.
Isn't that funny? Everything. I can totally see that. And I see how that's a good workaround.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Totally clean.
Well, I want to also chime in on the impact that this show made, because I have a distinct memory and I want to share it with you. The last episode, and we'll talk about this later, how it might not officially been the last, but the episode where Joni and Chachi get married was billed as the series finale. And it aired the night, it was my freshman year of college, and I was studying for a calculus test the next day. And I did not do well in calculus, let's say. So I gave myself this reprieve when this episode was going to air. I got to break from studying and watch the episode. And you guys, to this day, I feel like this was the moment I can say I went from being a child to that threshold of not being a child anymore. I bawled so hard during that. And meanwhile, I hadn't watched it like much in the 80s. But I realized this was the ending of something that had seen me through from 1974 until present day. And it was over. It was ending.
Wow.
That part of my life was ending. And I, to this day, if someone asks me, when do you feel like you grew up? Like, I would tell you that memory is so distinct
Joni
in my mind.
When Joni and Chachi got married. When did Joni and Chachi get married?
I have to give it a little backstory, obviously. But yes, it was when Joni and Chachi got married.
And that's interesting because we've talked about how we feel like Little House on the Prairie kind of did. We grew up with Little House on the Prairie too.
That's the other one.
And that's one of my other handful of shows that's the most impactful show of my early childhood. Of course, those shows changed as I got older. You know, we can throw in Family Ties. We can throw in 30-something. But for the 70s, it's Little House on the Prairie, it's Happy Days. And because they did see us through our childhood.
They were there the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. Well, you guys, I have a whole bunch of stuff written down that I'm supposed to start reading now. But can I just say how giddy I am to be chatting about this show with you guys?
You've been waiting for so long.
I've been waiting for this. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this is what the PCPS is all about, really. It's sharing these important pieces of our childhoods with each other and with all of our friends listening. Mm-hmm. And so I just feel like I'm so excited right now. I almost have like a nervous tummy to be like, to be talking about this show and these people, these characters that were so important to us. Okay, well, let's get to it. So Happy Days, one of the most successful and iconic series of the 1970s, and one that I'd argue almost everyone loved. And if you didn't, you are a monster. It aired on ABC from January 1974 to July 1984 with a total of 255 episodes. I want to give you, though, some interesting background about the show before we really dive into the meat. In late 1971, Michael Eisner
who at the time was head of production at Paramount. And you guys, we are learning that that guy had his finger on the pulse of everything.
Yes. Like, he's Hollywood. He's
before
Hollywood.
Time, I think, existed. Right. Before dinosaurs, Michael Eisner was there running the show. But he, along with Gary Marshall, created a pilot called New Family in Town, starring Ron Howard, Marion Ross, Anson Williams as their normal characters, Harold Gould as Howard, Rick Carrot as Chuck, and Susan Neher as Joni. But the network rejected it for one reason or another. And there are reasons if you guys want to do the research, but we don't have time for that. So Gary Marshall revised it as a short segment for Love American Style.
I love that.
And it's the little segment was originally called Love and the Television Set, but was later retitled to Love and the Happy Days, with that cast, which introduced the world to the Cunninghams and Potsy. and it's a really great little segment from Love American Style, easily found on YouTube. Listeners, go watch it. It's very cute. Like we talked about in our 1976 episode, in the early 70s, there was a huge nostalgic interest in the 1950s, right? Everyone needed a bomb following Vietnam and Watergate. Grease opens on Broadway in 1971 to huge accolades. And then Ron Howard stars in American Graffiti in 1973, which became one of the top grossing films that year. And suddenly ABC is like, we'll take another look at that little 50s show. But they wanted some changes. So Gary Marshall and crew did some character additions, Fonzie being one of them. They recast a few parts, Howard, Joni, Chuck. And it became a series. So Happy Days then, it was initially a moderate success, but the ratings began to fall during its second season. So Gary Marshall had to retool it a little bit. And the new format emphasized broader comedy and spotlighted Fonzie, who was previously a minor character. And if you go back and watch season one of Happy Days, it's not quite the same.
It feels
it doesn't
totally
have the
different.
Same yeah. feel. Yeah. Happy Days became the number one program in television in 1976, the 1976-1977 television season. So Happy Days might be easily identified for its theme song by Bill Haley and his Comets, but it was totally dependent on its cast for its success. And what a cast. I mean, this cast gives true meaning to the term ensemble, don't you guys think?
It's true.
Oh, without a doubt. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So let's go down the roster of the OGs, and we're going to start with Arthur Herbert Fonzarelli.
Because I'm the Fonz. Huh? Hey.
I didn't know his middle name was Herbert.
The Fonz.
I had no idea.
Yes.
I had no idea either.
Played by Henry Winkler, a.k.a. the nicest man in Hollywood.
Yeah, it's true.
Henry, come on our podcast. We're the nicest podcasters in Minnesota.
In podcast land.
Henry Winkler had studied theater at both Emerson College and Yale School of Drama, and appeared in two independent films. And he landed a small role on the Mary Tyler Moore Show before auditioning and getting the part of Fonzie. And fun fact, Mickey Dolenz also auditioned and was in the running to play the Fonz.
That would have worked for what they thought Fonzie was supposed to be in the beginning. But not for what Fonzie became.
No.
Right? Like, in the beginning, Fonzie was cast as, like, a cautionary tale to Richie. Like, this is what Richie could become if he doesn't make good choices. But then very soon, it turned out that the fans really loved the ne'er-do-well and the guy who was from the other side of the tracks. And he was sort of a lovable guy. I'm not sure Mickey Dolenz would have brought that to the role, because Arthur Fonzarelli became sort of a soft puppy, even though he was a cool dude.
Yeah, and Mickey comes with not baggage, but we know him as a monkey. So
yes,
I don't know. It would have been
hard
to be
kind of
goofy. Yeah, not that kind of monkey, but
I know. But could you have seen him as not a monkey? I don't know.
I don't think so.
No, I don't think you could.
It was too close. I mean, it was only 7 years or something from when he was a monkey.
Right.
Well, and I'll just say, in my opinion, Mickey Dolenz wasn't very cute, so.
Linda disagrees. Linda really thought he was adorable.
Well, I had read when Henry Winkler auditioned, he's dyslexic. I don't know if you guys knew that. And so he didn't memorize this, you know, they gave him the script, but he couldn't really read it right there. So he kind of made up what he thought Fonzie would say and kind of brought the essence of what Fonzie mm-hmm. would bring to, or what Henry would bring to the character of Fonzie. And when they asked him to read from the script, like, can you say some of the lines? And he just said, no, I just want you all to feel the essence of Fonzie. Geez. This is what That's Fonzie awesome. Would be like.
How can you imagine, how would somebody learn lines if you had that much difficulty reading? And yet you hear about, I would say there's a very high percentage of people in the acting community with dyslexia. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I recently heard Henry Winkler on a podcast, and you know, he's written a bunch of children's books, mm-hmm. like a bunch. And since he's dyslexic, there is a special font mm-hmm. for, and it's really a cool font to see for people with dyslexia. And his books are printed in that font. So for children, to help children be able to read his books.
Otherwise, you have to get the ebook and like switch the font. Yeah. So they're actually printed that way.
Yeah. No, some of his are printed that way. I think, mm-hmm. I don't know if all of them, but anyway. So Fonzie, like I said earlier, he was originally written as a secondary character, but soon became so popular that he became a lead and shared top billing with Ron Howard. And we all grew to love Fonzie for so much more than mm-hmm. his coolness and cuteness. I mean, Fonzie was the cool orphan with the heart of gold, and he had so much love and respect of family because he never had one. And most especially the Cunninghams. And let's not forget, Fonzie was also magical. He could pound his fist on a jukebox and it started playing. He could snap his fingers and girls would instantly appear. You guys, Fonzie is only one of two characters to be in all 255 episodes. Do you know who the other one is?
Well, I know it's not the obvious. I do know, actually.
Oh, but good.
The only reason that I know, you both know is because I've been researching it all week.
Yeah, that's right.
So, of course, I would have said Richie. Of course, I would have said Richie. But that's not the truth.
Did you not watch it at the end when Richie left?
No, I was in high school. So I was watching. I really wasn't watching TV.
Yeah, right. I wouldn't have known the answer to that offhand, though. I think I would have said Marion, I think.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, oh, it's not Marion. I thought it was Marion.
It's Howard.
No, it's Howard Cunningham.
So anyway, I think it's safe to say we all give Fonzie two big thumbs up, right, everyone?
Really fast, I want to insert a really fun fact while we're talking about Fonzie, because did you know that he was offered the role of Danny Zuko in the movie Grease?
In the movie? When he was on Happy Days?
When he was on Happy Days.
And that doesn't work for me.
Yes, I know. Again, probably why Mickey Dolenz wouldn't have worked for Fonzie, because we come to thinking of that role as Fonzie, and Danny Zuko was no Fonzie. So, and plus he's really short. Like someone said, he would have come up to like Olivia Newton-John's nipples or something.
Yeah,
he'd be that short.
It would have just been Fonzie.
Like she would have called him Dr. Fonzie then.
Get your notebook paper out.
Right.
How do you differentiate one 50s greaser from another 50s greaser?
Right.
No, I would have been confused. And also, let's throw it back to our Saturday Night Fever episodes. Wasn't there something about right after Saturday Night Fever, he had like a 3-picture deal, John Travolta, and they were like, we want him for Grease.
Right? Yeah.
So then were they like going back behind his back and being like, well, maybe we'll get Henry Winkler?
Well, It could have been prior.
Right. Because he said in an interview, Henry Winkler was interviewed by AARP magazine. You gotta love it. And he said he didn't want to be typecast, but then he's like, but I'm typecast already. So I went home and had an orange juice. Travolta went home and bought a plane.
Oh, jeez.
That's kind of, so it seems like he might regret it a little bit, which seems odd
to me. I think
he's
doing okay. He's doing just
fine. Oh, I think he's doing just fine. Well, we obviously know that Henry became a big star as Fonzie on Happy Days, but the other big star was Ron Howard as Richie Cunningham. Now, I want you to know that Richard Cunningham, I just said that. I want you to know that Ron Howard was my very first TV friend. Okay, you guys, he was the little boy that I wanted to go fishing with from the Andy Griffith Show. So he played Opie Taylor on Andy Griffith, which is how most of us knew Ronnie Howard. I just wanted to be his friend. So I think when we originally talked about who was our very first crush, I might have said him, but not like romantic crush. It was, he looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah, and he likes to go fishing.
My mom said the very first time I ever cried watching a television show was an episode of the Andy Griffith Show, and Opie had a pet bird, and the pet bird died. And she came into the room, and I had these tears coming down my face, and I had to be no older than like 5. And she asked me what was wrong, and I, Yes. And I was like, Opie's bird died. And so he must have been such a great actor even back then that I felt his sadness, and I too was sad at the death of the bird.
Oh, he's so cute. He was so cute.
He really was so cute.
So cute. And so, yes, yeah, so we know him as this child actor. He was in Music Man. He was in some other movies.
He had Music Man. I forgot about that.
Can I tell you something really quick? You guys, there's an episode where the Cunninghams are coming out of a theater having just watched The Music Man. And Mrs. C says that the little boy in the movie looks just like Richie. Oh. And Mr. C says that she's just being silly. But however, as we know, Ron Howard did play young Winthrop Peru in the film when he was just 8 years old. So that's kind of a fun little Easter egg they threw in
there.
It's
coming down the street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, there are a few Easter eggs that they have sprinkled throughout Happy Days. But let's think about Richie. Ron Howard played Richie from 1974 to 1980. Richie was the middle child of Howard and Marion Cunningham and brother to Joni and the elusive Chuck. He's the quintessential example of the all-American 1950s teenager. And, you know, with his red hair and his freckles, he did bear more than a passing resemblance to Howdy Doody. And again, a nod to a little Easter egg as they note that in when they're watching the Howdy Doody show that, oh, he looks a lot like you, Richie. And he really
that is one
was
of my favorite episodes, by the way, is when Richie enters the Howdy Doody contest, the Howdy Doody lookalike contest.
Yep.
My brother and I were rolling on the floor because, of course, all the other contestants are 10. And then there's Richie.
Right. That's right.
And Richie is, he's like, even when he's a teenager like that, he's always just so earnest, right?
So
he's always
earnest.
Just
yes.
So
yes.
Like,
yes.
Like serious and just everything just is going to matter, right?
And I don't
remember the big argument was that they were like, should we draw the lines from his lips down his jaw so he looks like a ventriloquist dummy? And he's like, no, you would have won if you had the lines drawn on your face.
I have two funny things to say about that. One is, well, this one isn't really funny, but this is another example of how my parents were so excited about this episode because they love the Howdy Doody show.
Yes,
I mean, they talked about the Howdy Doody show all the time to
us.
And they'd have us watch reruns if it was ever on. So they loved that part of it. And a little aside, my mom, the other day, I was telling her I thought I saw a new wrinkle. And she said, oh, that's a marionette line. And I said, oh, and she said, those wrinkles that come right down here are called marionette lines.
No.
So I'm pointing to those.
I can't unsee it.
We're going to call them Howdy Doody lines now.
Yes.
I can't unsee it now, Carolyn.
So do you remember whenever Richie was feeling lucky, especially with the girls, what did he do? Do you guys remember? He sang a little song.
Yeah, it was an FM.
Blueberry.
Listeners, real quick, just I was re-listening to one of our episodes today. I just have to point something out. When we all sing on this podcast, we actually we sing together, but for some reason, the way we record, we sound awesome.
We sound so good.
But we record remotely, so we're all in our own homes. So in the process, it does something and it makes us all like off. So when the podcast episode comes out, it sounds like one or two of us are like a beat behind. But just so you know, when we sang that right now, it was like in perfect three-part harmony.
It was a round. Oh, yes. We were just doing a round of Blueberry Hills.
We're recording it next week. It'll be available soon.
Every once in a while, Richie would be perturbed. And we knew he was perturbed because he would address his friends, or occasionally Fonzie, once his dad, with this term. Do you remember what he'd call people when he was like, listen up? And the one time he addressed his father as Bucko, he immediately apologized. He knew he had stepped out of line.
That's so
by
mean.
Addressing Howard as Bucko.
I think I'm a female Richie. I've just decided.
Yeah, you might be. You might be.
So Ron Howard actually decides to leave the show in 1980 to pursue his directing career. Thank goodness he did. He brought us wonderful films. And in the storyline, his character goes off to college at UW-Milwaukee and then does a stint in the Army where he was stationed in Greenland. And while he's there, he marries his longtime girlfriend, Lori Beth, and later they have a son, Richie Jr. And he actually pops back in the show, Richie does, for a couple of episodes now and then, including Joni and Chachi getting married. So Richie had a couple of good friends, one of them being Potsy.
Mm-hmm. So it's my job to tell you about Potsy now. But so my job is still about two characters, Mr. C and Potsy, but I'm going to shortchange Mr. C so I can spend all my time on Potsy. Let's just say Mr. C, played by Tom Bosley, yeah. Howard Cunningham, played by Tom Bosley. He was extremely prolific in TV prior to Happy Days, but he's far and away best known as Howard Cunningham, America's dad, owner of Cunningham Hardware. Is that what it's called? That doesn't sound right. Cunningham Hardware? Anyway, he owned a hardware store, yeah. And he went on to be the spokesperson for Glad sandwich bags. I'm sure you all remember. And ultimately, he became the male Angela Lansbury. He was... He co-starred on Murder, She Wrote as the sheriff of Cabot Cove, and then he gets his own murder show called The Father Dowling Mysteries, which essentially is Murder, He Wrote. So Warren Potsy Weber, on the other hand, played by Anson Williams, has a super interesting story, which I did not expect.
Oh, I'm excited.
So, I know. Potsy, he started out as Richie's savvier, more worldly friend, but by the third season, they sort of emphasized his more dim-witted side, and then they start using the word Potsy as a put-down. What a Potsy. Don't be a Potsy. Okay, so let's start with Anson Williams' name. His given name is Anson William Heimlich. Yes.
Like the maneuver?
That Heimlich. Yes. The Heimlich maneuver. Wow. His cousin, or uncle, depending on who you trust, is the person who invented the Heimlich maneuver.
Wow.
Do you think there's money in that? You know how if you say, like, his cousin or whatever is the person who invented the, you know, engine. Well, you're like, damn, they have a lot of family money. If you invent a maneuver,
it's not a widget.
Even if it's a life-saving maneuver, do you think there's money in that?
There's no product with a Heimlich maneuver. It's just your hands and staying alive. Oh, yeah. No, that's CPR. That's CPR. Yes. Never mind.
But you
don't
get to live
kids.
Knowing that people are alive.
You saved lives.
Because of your family. Yes. That's worth way more than money. That's priceless.
And your name lives on forever. Nobody doesn't know the name Heimlich.
No, because you're also a giant fat caterpillar in the great Disney movie Bug's Life.
Right. I had no idea.
Heimlich is one of the best characters in Bug's Life, actually.
Okay, so I thought Anson Williams was a singer first. And he was like, hey, you guys, I'm a singer. Will you let me sing on the show? Come on, because I'm a singer. No, he was not a singer. He was watching the rise of David Cassidy. And he was like, maybe I could do that. So he said, and this is a quote. This is what he said. I can sing, sort of. I just need to convince Gary Marshall to put me in a band on the show, which he did. And then Anson Williams just waited to become the next David Cassidy, which didn't exactly work out that way.
Well, that voice was not... It was like Jim Neighbor's voice. It was Jim Neighbor's voice.
Yes, it was very low.
I did not care for that voice.
You're 16.
And that's why you just identified it, Carolyn, because it was Jim Neighbors. It was not I Think I Love You at all.
No.
It was a shock when that voice came out of his mouth.
I didn't care for it. Sorry, Anson Williams.
I will tell you that until Chachi walked in, you know, seasons 1 through 4, I had a huge crush on Potsy.
Well, you just didn't have that many people to choose from, right? It was Ralph Malph or it was Potsy. You're going to choose Potsy, right? Which
that's
I
true.
Did too.
The and, singing okay, thing was kind of, I thought that was kind of cool, but I was yeah, never like, oh, yeah, I want to have an album of his.
No, and he did release an album and he had a hit. It was like number 99 on the top 100 or something like that. And I don't even know what the name of it was. No disrespect to Anson Williams. But David Cassidy, you know, had some special sauce. You just can't replicate that. You can't be like, I'm going to do that too. He didn't do too much acting after Happy Days, except to reprise the role of Potsy in various specials and reunions and stuff like that, thanks to his friend Ron Howard, who said, dude, go behind the camera. And so he became a director for shows like Melrose Place, Beverly Hills 90210, Sabrina the Teenage Witch, Baywatch. The list is long,
you guys. I didn't know that. Well, I'm happy for Anson.
I know. He did great. But even more, it gets weird, you guys. But
there's more.
Most interestingly, he became kind of a serial entrepreneur, making and marketing all sorts of weird products, like Alert Drops, which is an all-natural spray to help drowsy drivers stay awake, which he actually developed with the help
of Mr. Heimlich. That's just a water bottle. With a spray. That's just like a spray bottle with water.
No, he explains all the science behind it. It has to do with ascorbic acid and some nerve that's in the bottom of your tongue. I'm not even kidding. Like, he and Heimlich got together and like, let's do this. In the 80s, he opened a chain of diners with Al Molinaro. And the diner was called Big Al's.
Cute.
I know, isn't that cute?
But obviously it didn't take off, did it? Because we don't have one in every city.
Didn't take off, no. And then he broke into the beauty business with a line of cosmetics that was used on, like, professional cosmetics that is used on TV set.
Well, Potsy's sidekick was Ralph Mouth. I just can't say it without laughing.
I know.
And he was played by Donnie Most, and he was the show's clown and practical jokester, but most of his jokes weren't really funny and no one laughed. Mm-mm. But yet he'd still always say, you guys remember his catchphrase?
Oh, yeah. And once say, somebody else say it, because then when, because
no,
it, when I heard it,
I've still got it.
You have it at all? You didn't even have it.
So Ralph Mouth appeared up until season 8 when he went to college after his stint in the army. And then he made a guest appearance in the final season in a guest role, but he is not in the finale in Joni and Chachi's wedding.
Oh.
Do you know the other OG character who is not in the finale?
Oh, no.
It's Potsy. And I'll just say it. Ralph Mouth was my least favorite character on Happy Days.
I'm with you. Yeah.
He annoyed me.
And didn't he just give you Danny Bonaducci vibes?
Totally.
I mean, that's who I always thought he was, like, trying to be, or they were casting him as the redhead, kind of annoying. Are you feeling overwhelmed by all of those hormonal changes Gen X women are going through? Just because those changes are from natural processes doesn't mean we have to suffer through them. And that's why Kristen, Michelle, and I love Hormone Harmony. It's a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. The three of us have noticed improved sleep quality, gut health, and even our moods have improved. The science-backed herbal extracts in Hormone Harmony, called adaptogens, help the body adapt to all those hormonal changes that cause those life-disrupting symptoms, like hot flashes and night sweats, bloating and gas. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromises when it comes to quality, and it shows. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds, and there are over 30,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony, with one of the biggest benefits mentioned being, I feel like myself again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code PCPS at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code PCPS for 15% off today. Well, let's talk about Mom, Mrs. Cunningham, or Mrs. C, as she was often referred to by Richie's friends. Marion Cunningham was played by Marion Ross. And you guys, I had no idea until yesterday or last night when I was cramming to get my research done for today that she has such ties to Minnesota. Oh, my gosh.
What?
Okay. Oh, you guys.
I did not know that.
She was born in Watertown, Minnesota, which a month ago I wouldn't have known where that was, but it just so happened I drove through
Watertown
there a couple
Mayor.
Of weeks ago. Yeah, so she was born in Watertown, Minnesota. She moved to a couple places throughout the state, and she took classes at the McPhail School of Music and Drama. And prior to moving to Minneapolis, she lived for a long time in Albert Lea, where there is, current day, the Marion Ross Performing Arts Center. Marion Cunningham, she was the stereotypical housewife of that era, cooking and cleaning and keeping that family in order. But there were times that she was distressed. She didn't always like that role, and she often showed us that she had ambitions of her own, like the episode where she got a job as a waitress at the drive-in. I could always tell, though, that she was smarter than she would let on. She often had these passive-aggressive lines showing that side of her, and I just loved those moments, often happening with Howard as the butt of her jokes. You might recall she was the only character allowed to call Fonzie by his first name, Arthur, and she served as like a mother figure to him.
Mm-hmm. And I will say that I took from her, this was probably one of the first times in society or culture or wherever, where you had Richie the good boy and the Fonz, who was supposed to be the bad boy, but Marianne Ross doesn't care and she takes him in. And I just remember thinking how not judgy she was, because in right. my mind, a mother would be like shaking her finger, like, no, 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 and don't be like him, which I think is how the show started out. So maybe Marianne Ross had something to do with, no, I'm going to take him under my wing. He's my mm-hmm. child too.
Yes.
And I love Marianne so much. She was the quintessential 50s housewife and stuff. But didn't you guys also always get that she was stronger than that? Like, I never felt like she was really submissive to, submersive. She was, yeah. I never thought she was underwater. I never really got that whole, she had to be like submissive to Howard, even though, yes, she was always doing things for him and everything. You also got that Mrs. C could stand on her own two feet. And I felt like Howard respected her role too. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel like it was mm-hmm. that real, you know, Ozzie and Harriet type thing. I felt like it was a little bit more, they stood on equal ground a little bit more, even though they did still have those rules. Very defined gender roles.
Yeah, they were just playing by the rules, but they were just doing what society was telling them to do, but they weren't totally invested in it. And mm-hmm. you would never get a bigger laugh or a bigger cheer than if Marianne Ross said, sit on it, Howard.
Oh, so great. Yeah.
I mean, the place right. would just yes. erupt. Right?
Right. Because they would allow her, the writers, that was yeah. so brilliant of the writers to allow her to say that. Because really in the 50s, I'm not sure, you know, the TV shows that were on in the 50s, they certainly wouldn't have gotten away with
oh,
that.
Oh, hell no.
But yeah. here we have a show about people in the 50s where they're showing she can say that. So mm-hmm. I loved that. Okay, so that brings us to Joni. And oh man, do I have conflicting feelings about
I
Joni.
I know. I'm totally with you on that.
So originally, I was all about Joni. You guys know how I feel about the little sisters in shows. Like, I always identify with them, and they end up being my favorite. And at the beginning, I loved Joni. She was cute and sassy and funny, and I loved how she was kind of everyone's little sister. I always thought it was cute. She was always getting sent up to her room for being so nosy or being in everybody's business. And she was cute. Remember in season one, she always had Mickey Mouse ears on. Do mm-hmm. you guys remember that?
Joni. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But then Chachi arrived. And slowly, Joni started to become my mortal enemy. Everything she did or said bugged me to no end. She also just became annoying, I felt like, as the years, as she got older. Yeah. She just bugged me. This was even before Chachi. But so Erin Moran.
It happens to child actors a lot, right? They yeah. start out really cute and they have sort of a real instinct about how to deliver their lines. And it's once they grow up enough that they start to act that it all falls apart.
I feel
like, no,
yeah.
no, 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 yeah. stop now, stop.
She wasn't that good and she just. And sadly, her difficult personal life post Happy Days isn't really news to most of us. She suffered from depression, home foreclosures. Another time she was evicted from her trailer home due to excessive partying. She died in April of 2017 in Indiana from throat cancer, which she'd just been diagnosed with about 6 months prior. No illegal narcotics were found in her body or in her home. I feel like there's kind of a myth that she died of like a drug overdose or something mm-hmm. like that, but her husband was like very emphatic. In fact, he wrote like this big open letter that he had Scott Baio read about the doctors didn't tell us how serious it was. We would have gotten more, you know, aggressive treatment, blah, blah, blah. I don't know.
It's just
I don't
sad.
Think we'll know, but it's just sad. It's very sad. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you think of a lot of these stars that we've talked about, you know, after their heyday as the child star, they just had some really hard times and Hollywood yeah. just wasn't there for those mm-hmm. kids.
Okay, so while this group of OG characters are certainly memorable, there are other characters who came along as the seasons progressed that are worth mentioning. One in particular. So here are just a few others. And yes, listeners, we know there are others. We just don't have time to mention all of them. So if you want to let us know who your favorites are that we are neglecting to mention, just shoot us a comment on our Instagram post or send us a lovely email. There's so many. There's so many. We only have 3.5 hours, guys. Okay. So we're going to start with Mitsumu Takahashi. Played by Pat Morita. You guys might know him as Arnold. He was the owner of Arnold's Drive-In, but only in seasons 1 through 3. And then he returns after Al gets married in the final seasons. But we love love Arnold, right?
I loved Arnold.
In seasons one through three. Of course, we then, you know that Arnold becomes our beloved Mr. Miyagi in 1984 and the Karate Kid. But I don't remember this, but you guys, I think this is so great. So like I just said, his name is not Arnold. It's Mitsumo. But when he bought Arnold's, people thought it was named after him. And since it was too expensive to get all the letters in Takahashi to rename it, he just went with Arnold.
Is that ever explained on the show, or is that just backstory?
I think it is. I think it's in, well, that's a good point. That's I'd have to funny. Watch every episode of season one to see if it's explained. But I thought that was just, even if that's just a backstory someone made up, I'm going to stick with it. I think it's
that
really
funny. That
seems
like a good historical hobby to have.
Yeah.
Like when we're done recording, I'm going to go watch season one of Happy Days. Let's find the origin of all of these things.
Yeah. Okay. So then after Arnold leaves, along comes Al Delvecchio, played by Al Molinaro. Molinaro. Potato or potato?
Well, I'm only going to tell you what I say, but that has nothing to do with nothing.
I'm going
to
say Molinaro.
Okay.
And I would say Molinaro too. Or no, that's kind of
you guys.
You're sorry. Paranormal.
Is it gala or gala? Okay. From seasons 4 to 9, because, you know, like I just said, Arnold got married and left. So Al was the best, though. You guys remember how he'd always go, yep. When he was disappointed.
He inexplicably, bugged me. I don't know why.
Oh, I love him. He was kind of a surrogate family to many of them. And he becomes actual family to Fonzie and Chachi when he marries Chachi's mother, Louisa, in the later seasons.
That's right.
Yes. Which brings us to Charles Arcola, or Chachi. Fonzie's young cousin, played by a very cute Scott Baio, arrives in season 5 in 1977. And little Michelle's world went from black and white to Technicolor. And now it's time for the PCPS Baio disclaimer. We here at the PCPS do not condone nor support current-day Scott Baio and his beliefs, but remain loyal to our feelings of the late 70s, early 80s version of Scott Baio, particularly Chachi Arcola, especially Michelle, who truly believed she would marry him and is ever so thankful she did not. Okay. So, Chachi was quickly made a regular character after receiving over 5,000 fan letters 1 week, and he became Fonzie's sidekick. And then later, he was just kind of one of the boys when he matured and grew up and got muscles. And he looked up to Fonzie like an older brother. It was actually a really sweet,
sweet
relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Fonzie kind of treated him like a younger brother, but also kind of a father figure at times. Chachi's catchphrase, wah, 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 quickly caught on. So as we know, Chachi immediately becomes enraptured by Joni, but she just thinks of him as a little kid. She calls him shrimp, drip. Mm-hmm. But you guys, in season 5, when he comes on, he is a lot smaller than Joni.
He's teeny.
Yes, I never got
over
that.
He looks like he's about 3 years younger than she is.
Yeah.
But when Baio reached puberty and they got to high school and started to date, thus begins the whole Joni loves Chachi years. Mm-hmm. In season 9, they leave for Chicago to try to make it as vocalists. Carolyn, please insert laughter here. But they return.
Just reading that line is so funny.
Yeah. But they return in the final season to break up and then to reunite and get married, which is the, air quotes, final episode of the series. And you guys know, and listeners know, I don't remember much about my childhood. But that wedding is burned into my brain. It impacted me. It was as if it was my own wedding.
Oh, my God.
For years, I was going to have my husband say for his vows, he was just going to have to recite the Elvis Presley song. God. He wasn't going to be able to say anything else, and that was going to be like our first dance song. But as we've said in this podcast many times, and as listeners know, I will always, my heart will always be true to Chachi Arcola, no matter what I think of Scott Baio today.
They're two different people.
You know what I think is crazy is that exact moment when you are impacted by that wedding and thinking you're going to be using some of the music in your own wedding, and I'm having this big emotional moment at the same exact time, halfway across the country for totally different reasons, but we both, this is a touchstone for both of us in our growing up.
So much so. And it's the stupidest vow there ever could be. But in my little 1984, I mean, I was a freshman. I was an eighth grade. So mm-hmm. I was like, I mean, I had hearts for eyes watching that, you know? That's all I have to say about Chachi.
Oh, okay.
Until later.
What? I never could get past Joni seeming like his big sister. Like, I thought that
I agree.
Was almost
yeah.
like
yeah.
the weirdest relationship and marriage and all of that. I never
well,
could
I'll
buy it.
I'll tell you why. One reason, and I'm not you know, I'm really going to try not to be hyper, like, critical of someone's appearance because I don't like that and I do not condone that. But because it's Joni Cunningham, who was my mortal enemy, I feel okay. And I feel like this is a safe space. But I feel like it's because her hairdo, she looked matronly. She always looked like a mom.
Yes. Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Now, let's mm-hmm. just say she had this really curly hair. I'm not going to say they needed to straighten it or anything. Could they have come up with a more attractive style for it? I say yes.
Well, and I think they were trying to do like some sort of mullety thing. You know, when they stop being 50s, even though they're supposed mm-hmm. to be in the 50s, but they're really in the 80s. So then they start to look at the 80s, but it's not really working. So then it just looks like a poodle head.
Well, they do that with Scott Baio too, because the very yes. last seasons, mm-hmm. he has that mullet that was very popular in yep. the early 80s.
Not in the early 60s.
We're supposed to remember this is supposed to be like 1960.
Right. And that always bugged me. That yeah. bugged me. It's so yeah. funny you bring up her hair because her hair bothered me too.
Okay, so let's keep going. Let's talk about Jenny Piccolo. That's Joni's boy crazy best friend, played by Kathy Silvers from 1980 to 1983 when she became a regular character. Although Jenny Piccolo is mentioned a lot in
All
early episodes. Joni's always asking to go to Jenny Piccolo's house, or she's blaming Jenny Piccolo for someone or for something, or Howard and Marion are blaming Jenny Piccolo or forbidding her to go to Jenny Piccolo's house.
I think Jenny Piccolo was just a name that they thought it was a funny name. They're like, we need a name for Joni to talk to. But let's do this. Jenny Piccolo.
I think you're half right, because what happened is in 1980, so she's on like from 80 to 83, just kind of as it may be a guest appearance. She becomes a regular in 1983, along with, and I'm just going off the top of my head here, I don't have any of this written down, but it's like Crystal Bernard, Ted McGinley. Mm-hmm. So what's happening is we've got a lot of these OG core characters leaving. Ron Howard's leaving, Anson Williams leaving, Donnie Most is leaving, and they need to bring other people on. Now Fonzie's sort of the central character, and Joni and Chachi's mm-hmm. relationship was very much centered on in those later years. So they need to bring in kind of then now their gang, right? I don't know if you remember the characters of Crystal Bernard, and now I'm going to forget who she played, but she like moves into the Cunningham house.
Yeah. She's like Cousin Oliver.
Yeah, exactly. but I think we can all say we all love Jenny Piccolo even before she was a character on mm-hmm. the show, when she was just
sure.
a name.
Yes, absolutely.
Was,
it's a
yeah,
great
her and
name.
Joni were awesome always like name. Getting into some like skerfuffle, right? Like,
yeah.
Okay. And then lastly, I'm just going to mention, Lori Beth Allen was her name before it was Lori Beth Cunningham. And she was played by Linda Goodfriend, who, as Carolyn already mentioned, becomes Richie's steady girlfriend in 1977 and then later his wife. And do you guys remember how they got married?
Well, they got married via telephone because he was in Greenland and Fonzie was the best man.
Well, and he had a stand-in for Richie, like as proxy.
Oh, that's right. Oh, that's right.
Yeah. And then when she has little Richie, do you remember who delivered the baby? Because again,
oh, please, is it Fonzie?
Richie wasn't there.
Oh my God.
Fonzie delivers deliver little Richie.
This mm-hmm. I'm not okay with any of this. This is all ironically jumping the shark. And we'll
you know what?
He
put, it's okay, Kristen. He put a piece of notebook paper in between him and Lori Beth's vagina.
Oh my God.
Well, lest we forget, there's one more character.
Yeah, I don't know who you must be talking
our
about.
Our friend, the mysterious, elusive Chuck Cunningham.
Everyone's favorite.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And he was so popular, that character, that they actually had to have two different actors play him over the 12 episodes he was actually in. So Gavin O'Herlihy and Randolph Roberts were the two actors that played Chuck, who was Joni and Richie's older brother, who liked basketball, was rarely home.
That's
right. Yeah, always has a basketball. After season two is when he just disappeared into the ether. He just goes up the stairs. We never hear about him again. We think fans believe that he must have gone off to college. But interestingly enough, at the end of season 11, Howard is talking about his kids and he says how proud he is of his two children. So it's like,
oh,
Chuck never
just
even
erased him.
Totally.
Wow.
Yes. existed.
Let's pause here for a word from our sponsor. That's us, because the Pop Culture Preservation Society is a completely independent and self-sustained project. We not only created this podcast, we also produce it and finance it ourselves. That means we depend on you, our listeners, to help us cover our costs and grow our listening audience. Without your contributions, we quite literally could not exist. We really would disappear like Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition. You're the gas in our tank, the wind beneath our wings. You're like Christy McNichol doing the obstacle course on Battle of the Network Stars, carrying your team to victory. That's you. You can become a supporter of the PCPS at patreon.com, patreon.com. Go to the website and search for Pop Culture Preservation Society or look for the Patreon link in our Linktree on Instagram. If you support the PCPS at the superstar level, just $5 a month, you'll get fun printable art every month to perk up your office. Join at the solid gold level for bonus content and outtakes from our episodes. And for $19.76 a month, you can achieve bicentennial status, which includes everything you see here, plus live virtual events with your favorite podcast hosts. That's us, I hope. Book clubs, happy hour chats, pop culture bingo games, and maybe even some surprise guests one of these days. And as always, if you're not able to help out at this time, the most valuable thing you can do for us is listen and tell a friend. Thank you so much. Now let's get back to the show. Okay, so like Michelle said, Gary Marshall's original attempt at nostalgia was not very well received. The first season got very low ratings. It was on the verge of being canceled. Remember how we said the first season kind of felt funny? It was quieter. There was no, maybe there was a laugh track. It just wasn't the studio audience. And so, like we said, Gary Marshall changed gears. He turned the second season into a colossal hit. The show went from a very quiet and charming story to a loud, gimmicky, family-friendly fun time. It was totally different. And he made the quiet cautionary tale, aka Fonzie, into a major player instead of a side character. And then they booted Chuck. The show became more about getting a laugh than it was really about telling an intricate nostalgia-laced story, which was Gary Marshall's intention. So when they make this shift, the critics thought the producers were selling out by dumbing down the comedy. And they got panned. But who cares? Because the fans disagreed, mm-hmm. and it zoomed to the top of the ratings and became the number one show, like Michelle said, on TV starting in the 1976-77 season. And as a result, Fonzie became one of the most merchandised characters of the 1970s. There are some who have called him a lunchbox icon, which I love.
I'm looking for that lunchbox, by the way.
Icon. Mm-hmm. So the show in general, all of the characters spawned just a truckload of merch, which was sort of how we children of the 70s expressed ourselves with the stuff mm-hmm. that we had, right? So in addition to lunchboxes, there were posters, action figures, a board game, bedding, and pillowcases. Pillowcases were big in the 70s. That's how we learned to kiss, right?
Wait, and our society member, Erica, has that Fonzie pillowcase with her name. Her mom embroidered her name on it, and she still has it to this day.
I didn't know it was embroidered. That
is
adorable.
It says Erica on it. Erica, we're going to post that picture this week. And I think we posted it before, but it deserves a second
Definitely.
Look.
Definitely.
There were also trading cards, which we have, thanks to a nostalgia-loving friend, which also came with a really cool sticker to put on your school folder. There was a limited edition there were limited edition glasses that were produced by Dr. Pepper, which I'm sure somebody still has those out there, and they're going to get a pretty penny on eBay. So, by the way, if any of you society members have any of these items, please send us pictures. We want to see what you've got. Mm-hmm. I'm sure a lot of you have the lunchbox.
Oh, and
we'll
share them in our stories, too.
Yeah. And then
I have the Richie doll that looks a lot like G.I. Joe.
Oh, yeah.
You do. With the brown hair.
Yeah, and so I have
the Chachi doll that I just got for Christmas this year that does not look like Chachi except for the bandana around his.
They just took G.I. Joe and they recycled him. They put a bandana around his leg and now he's Chachi, right? Okay, so in addition to all of that merch that I just mentioned, there is also this album that I recently found at a record store and I had to have it. So this album is called Fonzie Favorites. And it's not songs by Fonzie, it's songs that Fonzie would like were he like, to listen to songs.
His playlist.
Can we also just say playlist. That is one of the cutest pictures of Henry Winkler Fonzie I've ever seen.
It's just his face. There's no text on the cover of the album, and I'll tell you why. We'll get there in a second. It is an adorable picture of just Fonzie's face, no words whatsoever. So here are the songs that Fonzie would like were he to listen to some music. Splish Splash, Barbara Ann, Rock Around the Clock, Great Balls of Fire, and there are a couple of originals, the Fonzarelli Slide and the Fonz Song, both of which are unlistenable. Absolutely, like fingernails on a chalkboard. And the last song is called, and I'm not making this up. It's called A Cool Nerd Sit on It.
Oh.
And yes. It's supposed to be an impressionist track to help you learn how to say Fonzie's catch-all words. It's just those words over and over again. It's like some music underneath and some guy going, A Cool Nerd Sit on It. Nerd, sit on it over and over again. But you guys, it's not even Henry Winkler's voice. It's like some random dude. Okay, so I talked about the album cover being this adorable picture of Fonzie. He is large and in charge, and there's nothing on that album to mar his face. Because if you flip the album over on the back, there's a little flap that you can fold back. And it serves as a little stand. So you can put your album cover like a little piece of art.
On your mantle.
What a clever idea.
I hope next time I'm at your house, that better be on your mantle.
Oh, hell yeah. So there was a lot of merch. There was a lot. And it was very lucrative. Their faces were everywhere. There's a lot of stuff out there.
Yeah.
They couldn't keep track. Yeah. There's no way for them to keep track.
So, Kristen, beyond some of those really cool things you just shared, I too discovered some fun facts about Happy Days. I am going to put those over on Patreon. So if you are a patron, be sure and head over to our Patreon page and you'll find out all of the things that I discovered that I thought were pretty cool. I'll sprinkle some more fun facts in a little bit, but I did want to tell you about some of the guest stars who appeared. Now, as Michelle said before, there were lots, and I'm sure I'm going to miss some, but these were some that stood out to me. So we had Cheryl Ladd, Tony Randall, Maureen McCormick, and Christopher Knight, not in the same episode, but we had two Brady Bunch tie-ins, Morgan Fairchild, Linda Pearl, Hank Aaron as himself, June Lockhart, Danny Thomas, Charlene Tilton, Tom Hanks, and how could we ever forget Robin Williams?
Yeah. I know. Mm-hmm.
I know.
So there were, Robin Williams obviously went from one episode of Happy Days to getting his own show, Mork and Mindy. So in its 11 seasons on the air, Happy Days became the second longest running sitcom in ABC's history behind Ozzie and Harriet. And it also gave us 7 spinoffs. Mork and Mindy is probably the one. Yes, 7
spinoffs. That's crazy.
Mork and Mindy, I think, is the least likely and the most memorable and most successful of them all. How it is that Robin Williams shows up as an alien and sits on his head and then they become a series? I don't know. We do know that he basically blew people away. Like they had no control over him whatsoever. And he was just like this magic that alighted on the set and they just let him do whatever he wanted, even though it made no sense. It made no sense. They're like, give that man a show. Okay. So among the 7 spinoffs, we have Mork and Mindy. Of course, Laverne and Shirley, which became the number one show after Happy Days. Then we have a show called Blansky's Beauties, which we're going to talk about next week. Mork and Mindy, a show called Out of the Blue, which I didn't remember until I read the write-up for the pilot. Listen to this. Out of the Blue, 1979, a not-so-perfect angel named Random must prove his heavenly powers to a brood of newly orphaned children by conjuring up a visit from the unpredictable Mork from Ork, starring Clark Brandon and Olivia Barish.
Oh, Clark Brandon. No,
Clark,
I love
Clark
him.
Brandon. You know, yes.
From the Fitzpatricks.
Yes.
I'm all like, in my head, I'm like, he's from Tiger Beat magazine.
Right. And you wonder, like, why was he in Tiger Beat? Because he was in a bunch of things, but we just didn't know who he was or
right.
He couldn't land. Yeah. Because he was on all these shows that got canned.
Lasted one season.
So that's out of the blue. And then there were a couple of spinoff pilots that got filmed but never made it to the air, including The Ralph and Potsy Show, as well as The Pinky Tuscadero Show. Never made it to the air. But I'm leaving out one very important one, Michelle. Which mm-hmm. one is that?
Well, that would be my favorite television show of all time, Joanie Loves Chachi. I'm just kidding. However, no, for those 17 right. episodes, those 17 big episodes, I was glued to my TV. So as I told you before, Joanie and Chachi leave to try to go make it as vocalists in Chicago. But it's the theme song to Joanie Loves Chachi that will always hold a special place in my heart. I don't know if you guys remember it. It goes a little something like this. And this is literally how Scott Baio sings it. So... So he's starting as just spotlight on Scott Baio, and he's just dun, dun, dun at the piano, dun, dun, and then he just starts. Something magic in the way you hold me in your eyes. And then here comes Joanie, and she's like, no one ever
warned me, love just takes you by surprise. I don't know what's come over me. You got me hypnotized.
What's interesting about that theme song, I'll have you know, I can sing the whole thing, but I'm not.
And
going
I just
to.
Have to say, when you do Chachi, when she's singing the Chachi part, her face just kind of goes dead.
You go slack. Yeah. You know what we could do, if you like, I can record myself singing the entire theme song with both parts and trumpets as well, and we can put it on Patreon. So,
oh yeah.
Oh wait, we don't want to lose patrons. Never mind.
Right. Oops.
This is a good thing, everyone.
So glad it brought you some joy in the early 80s.
It was everything to me. And it doesn't make me sad at all that I can't still have that today. Like, I can't still crush on Scott Baio today. That doesn't make me sad at all, because I will be honest with you. Once 1984 came along, I was done with Chachi Arcola. I was done with Scott Baio. Simon Le Bon had come into my radar, and he was a British man.
Yep.
And so I was done.
So Happy Days left quite a legacy in addition to Chachi.
In addition to Michelle.
In addition
feels.
To Chachi and all of these spinoffs, Happy Days also left us with the phrase, jump the shark. And this comes from an episode in season 5 in which Fonzie literally jumps a shark on water skis. I don't have to tell you what happened. You were all there. You were all talking about it at school the next day. But the phrase has come to mean when a show does something crazy in a desperate grab to stay relevant, possibly because it's on its last legs and it needs to get some eyeballs. Like when the Bradys suddenly adopt Cousin Oliver because, you know, 6 kids weren't enough, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So let's juice the ratings by getting another one and let's make him look like a tiny John Denver. That will certainly make everybody watch the Brady Bunch again.
Paul Williams.
Right. Okay, totally. So the idea for the scene actually came from Henry Winkler himself. I was certain that this was something that some writer, like the writers were panicking, like, what are we going to do? How about water skiing? No, this came from Henry Winkler, who was an avid water skier. And his dad, Henry Winkler's dad, kept badgering him to tell the producers he could water ski. Why? Why Henry Winkler? I don't understand Henry Winkler's dad. Why was this important to you that the producers know that he could water ski? It feels like, you know, dance for grandma, dance for grandma. But nonetheless, he said yes. He was like, fine, dad, I'll tell him I can water ski. So this was their Brady's go to Hawaii moment, because everybody, the whole cast, goes to Hollywood on vacation. Mm-hmm. This is such a 70s sitcom improbability. We don't pack up the whole neighborhood and go on vacation, but you know, in 70s sitcoms you do. The thing that I remember most about this episode is Fonzie is wearing shorts.
Right.
And he's wearing shorts with a leather jacket.
In his leather jacket, yeah.
Yeah, in his leather jacket. And so he's water skiing in a leather jacket. And he has a little life preserver belt around his
leather
jacket.
Well, he couldn't wear the orange jacket.
No.
You know, back then, the life preservers were those orange things that go around your neck. He couldn't do that. It'd cover up his leather jacket.
Right. It was just, all of it was just too much. It was too much. Henry Winkler did all of that skiing, by the way, except for the actual jumping part, because he was like, I couldn't jump. I could just ski, but I couldn't jump. So it doesn't matter how ridiculous it was, because 30 million people watched Fonzie jump the shark that night. And Henry Winkler has pointed out, and when people ask him about this, you know, they rib him a little bit about jumping the shark and he's responsible for jumping the shark. this was not a grab for relevance because they were number one. And they continued to be number one for like 5 years after that. They were not needing any more relevance. So how that became a term for, you know, a desperate grab for relevance, I'm not exactly sure. And fun fact, if you watch episode 13 in the second season of Arrested Development, Henry Winkler as the inept attorney, Barry Zuckerkorn, jumps over a little shark.
Does he really?
He does. It's super funny. He's like, boop, oh, just jumped over a shark.
But I want to continue on some fun facts to pass along to you guys. So thank you for those, Kristen. A few other ones that you guys might not know, although if you listen to episode 56 of our podcast, Living in a Dream Home, you may remember that the Cunninghams' house was not in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, but actually in Los Angeles, just a few blocks away from the Paramount lot where Happy Days was filmed. Oh. So, and what I've heard too is all the houses on this block are very kind of Mediterranean and Spanish styled. And then that house just stuck out as this kind of all-American, almost colonial looking house. And I think Gary Marshall saw it and thought, that's the house. Originally, Happy Days was filmed with a single camera, which I think is kind of what we talked about earlier. But from season three on, it was a multi-camera show. And that's when we started to see the live studio audience.
And that's when it feels different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it also looks different because if you look closely at the set in seasons one and two, it's almost flipped. So the front door is on the opposite side of where the front door is from season three on. So it's on the left-hand side instead of the right-hand side. And stairs and all that the same. And that was in order to fit all the cameras in as well as seats for the live studio audience. Anson Williams sang many of the songs that were played on that jukebox at Arnold's and Al's. So, yes, I didn't know that as well, but I learned that. And this
were they
is
original
one-
songs or like he sang covers? They would have been sang covers.
Yeah. Well, I feel like the only song he ever sang was "You're 16, you're beautiful."
Yeah.
And
he sang that one too.
Put your head on my shoulder. So tight, show me that you love me too.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Sing that
that's
all the
my
time.
Favorite episode.
That's the one where Joni falls in love with him.
Oh, that's
just
my
about
favorite.
To say, I love that episode when Joni falls
that's
in love
my,
with him.
If we talk about our favorites, that's my favorite one. No, I think they were covers. I don't think we were supposed to know it was Potsy singing them. It was just like kind of the background music. At least that's what I read on somewhere. I could be wrong. This is perhaps one of my favorite little facts I learned. So Jerry Paris, does anyone know who Jerry Paris is?
I'm raising my hand.
Kristen does.
Of course I
okay.
do.
Who is Jerry Paris, Kristen? Who
Jerry
did he
Paris
play?
Is Jerry Helper on the Dick Van Dyke Show. He's Rob Petrie's neighbor.
Oh. He is Rob Petrie's neighbor. And he is also the director of the majority of the Happy Days episodes. So he was, and he also has some cameos that we'll talk about later that he pops in every once in a while.
And they, every once in a while, Marion and Howard will refer to the helpers. They play bridge with the helpers.
I did not know that.
That's funny.
Yep. Fun fact. I love all that stuff.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah. So, so those were several other fun facts that I uncovered in my rabbit hole dig.
I love that. So in 1983, the ratings had dropped and the series had just wound down and grown out naturally, as most series do by about year 8 and 9. And for all intents and purposes, the two-part episode called Passages was to be the end of the series. The final memorable scene with Howard breaking the fourth wall and toasting not just the guests at Joni and Chachi's wedding, but the TV viewing audience as well with...
Well... What can I say? Both of our children are married now, and they're starting out to build lives of their own. And I guess when you reach a milestone like this, you have to reflect back on what you've done and on what you've accomplished. Marion and I have not climbed Mount Everest or written the great American novel, but we've had had the joy of raising two wonderful kids and watching them and their friends grow up into loving adults. And now, we're going to have the pleasure of watching them pass that love on to their children. And I guess no man or woman could ask for anything more. So thank you all for being part of our family. To happy days.
That's when I lost it. That's when I lost it.
That was so
saying goodbye.
It was powerful. But that was not actually the end, because earlier in 1984, the show had been bumped due to the Winter Olympics, and there were still four episodes in the can that hadn't been aired in winter. So instead of just adding them back in March or whenever and just pushing the series finale, they cut them, like just got rid of them, aired the finale as planned in the spring, and then added three of those four episodes back in June and July. So they're all out of order. And the actual final episode of Happy Days is one called Fonzie Spots, which was randomly aired in September of 1984.
And has no closure whatsoever.
Regardless, most people, me included, consider Joni and Chachi's wedding and Howard's final touching toast to be the true perfect ending to Happy Days.
And my childhood.
Like I've said, my favorite episode for sure would be Joni and Chachi's wedding, just because basically it's just Chachi's wedding. It's Chachi and Michelle's wedding.
me with that one.
What are some that really stand out to you?
Well, I loved what we referred to just a few minutes ago, the episode where Potsy sings Put Your Head on My Shoulder and Joni officially just falls in love with him.
So cute.
And, oh, it is so cute. But the best part, well, because I was like you, Michelle, I kind of had a crush on Potsy as well. And I always felt kind of sorry for him that they were always making fun of him. I always have a little empathy for those characters. But in this one, he's kind of the cool dude. And at the end, when he has to kind of tell Joni that, you know, it's not going to work right now. And in a few years, he said, like, you know, I won't be that exciting to you, I promise. And he's so sincere. Mm-hmm. It just, oh, it's like he was talking to me or something. And I loved it. I loved that episode. I loved his sincerity. And really, there weren't a whole lot of episodes where he was kind of more of the star, or, you know, the focus was on him. So I think that's maybe another reason that it stuck out.
If they had done that more, Carolyn, if they had given him those kinds of storylines, he could have been a little bit more David Cassidy-ish. But instead they made him the dim-witted guy.
I know.
Except for he was like a 50s square. He was never going to be David Cassidy, no matter how great his voice might have been, because David Cassidy got to dress in the bell bottoms with the feathered hair and the puka shells around his neck and the really cool flowy tops.
Potsy couldn't.
Potsy was always going to be stuck in the 50s, no matter if it really was 1978. So he was always going to have that little square, like Ken doll hair and the letter sweater. So he was never going to be David Cassidy.
No, that was just, sorry, Potsy.
Yeah. That's never, sorry, Potsy, but we did love you.
Yes. So for me, I have two favorites. One is a close runner-up. My runner-up favorite is when Leather Tuscadero comes to town and Joni wants to run away and be one of the Suedes, because remember, it was Leather and the Suedes. Leather Tuscadero is played by Suzy Quatro, who, by the way, was an actual recording artist, but I didn't know. I had no idea. I remembered when she had a hit after her Happy Days appearance with Stumbling In. Is that what it is? I was getting it mixed up with I'll Tumble For You, but that's not right. Okay. I think it's Stumbling In. So Joni wants to run away and be one of the Suedes, but of course Howard and Marion say no. And the last scene is so sad when Leather leaves and Joni goes up on stage and she does her backup singer choreography in slow motion. She goes, wow, bop, bop, wow, bop, bop. And it's just so sad because Leather's gone.
Aw.
And so my number one most favorite Happy Days episode, no big surprise here, is Fonzie Loves Pinky. And I'm not going to say another word about it because that is next week's episode. Thank you so much for rocking around the clock with us today. And we will see you next week when we will be dressed all in pink for a recap of the most famous Happy Days episode of them all, Fonzie Loves Pinky.
Oh, I can't wait. Well, if you want to get fun extras and links to things we mention in our episodes or just things the three of us are loving right now, make sure to subscribe to our weekly reader. It's delivered each Friday morning into your inbox. Just check these show notes, go to our website, poppreservationists.com, or click the Linktree link in our bio on Instagram. And if you're a new listener, welcome! We have over 75 fun conversations just like this one for you to listen to. So go check them out.
That's so lucky. I kind of wish I still had 75 episodes to still listen to. And to all of you who do listen, and even better, share our podcast, we really want to say thank you. The ratings, the reviews, the kind emails and DMs we get telling us how a certain conversation touched you or just made you laugh until you peed a little bit. That all means the world to us. And it's really why we keep doing what we do. And another huge reason we are able to keep doing what we do is because of the support we get from our Patreon members. The PCPS would quite honestly not be possible without them. And if you want to check out our Patreon page and all the fun and exclusive content our patrons get as a thank you, just go to patreon.com. That's patreon.com. And just type our name up in the search bubble, or you'll find links in our social media bios or right in these show notes. And today we are giving a special shout out to patrons Jennifer, Erica, Lisa, Natalie, Nina, and Debbie. You guys are the best. Thank you so much.
In the meantime, let's raise our glasses for a toast, courtesy of the cast of Three's Company, to good times.
To happy days.
To Little House on the Prairie.
Cheers.
The information, opinions, and comments expressed on the Pop Culture Preservation Society podcast belong solely to Carolyn, the Crushologist, and Hello Newman, and are in no way representative of our employers or affiliates. And though we truly believe we are always right, there is always a first time. The PCPS is written, produced, and recorded in Minneapolis, Minnesota, home of the fictional WJM Studios and our beloved Mary Richards. Nanu Nanu, keep on trucking, and may the force be with you.
Love and we'll keep moving on. Something always happens whenever we're together. We get a happy feeling.